FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is December 4th, 2018. Well, it's a lot going on in the financial world for sure. Little truce going on at the G20. Whether it's real or not, we'll soon see. My guess is it's a portent of bigger things to come, and totally expecting it. In fact, on a recent show with our good friend Nick Santiago, he put the drop dead date for this agreement at December 6th, 2018. So we were 3 days off because that cycle-wise seemed to have been it. Well, I don't know if you caught the news today, but Altria, that is the reconstituted Philip Morris domestic arm of two companies. It's split off international and domestic because international growth potential is much higher, is looking to acquire minority stake in Juul, which is a cannabis company. So interestingly enough, the legal and black market sales of cannabis in the U.S. estimated at $52.5 billion, according to Marijuana Business Daily. In e-cigarettes last year, the market hit $6.6 billion in the U.S. Just some interesting numbers. Hey, as always, be a part of the show and email us. The address is kl@kerrylutz.com. So with me now is a cannabis entrepreneur by the name of Warren Bravo. Warren, your company Green Relief, a Canadian company. You're looking forward to getting a listing on the CSE, Canadian Securities Exchange. And hey, we're thrilled to have you on the show.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, so looking at, it looks like you're kind of going towards the organic method of growing your product. You're not going to use pesticides or fertilizers. So how do you do this?
Well, we are the only globally, or I should say, we are the only grower of cannabis, and we are a medically focused cannabis company of growing cannabis using aquaponics as our method of methodology for growing our product. So, you know, aquaponics is on the organic or natural side of the world. You're correct that we do not use fertilizers or pesticides or anything topical on our plants. Aquaponics is a closed loop ecosystem, basically using 90% less water than any other form of agriculture used in the world today. So we're growing our plants in a very sustainable manner, using LED lights, trying to save a little bit of electricity cost as well. And like to think that we are the sustainable guys on the block. But the other side of that is that nobody else has figured out how to grow cannabis effectively aquaponically. It's taken us close to 3 years to figure it out. And now nobody can touch us from a yield or cleanliness standpoint. Efficacy of our product is off the charts. So that's Green Relief in a nutshell.
Very interesting. So just can you define what aquaponics is exactly? Obviously, it's dealing with water. Figured that one
sure.
out, but what does
yeah,
it mean?
Well, so aquaponics. So just think of a freshwater lake that has a lily pad or a bulrush growing in it. You know, those water plants, those deep water culture, they're being fertilized by the fish that live in that water. You know, fish waste can be broken down naturally and microbially by heterotrophic and aerobic bacteria. It turns that solid waste into NPK for the plant. So your nitrates, phosphorus, potassium are all generated and converted from solid fish waste into NPK with all these different kinds of bacteria in a freshwater lake or basic ecosystem. So what we've done is we've commercialized that ecosystem and made it totally scalable due to all science-based scientific data. Stocking density of fish in our tanks, amount of feed, type of feed, water temperatures, flow rates, surface area to water or hard surface area to water surface area, all these scientific data points. We've established, proven, able to have the ability now to grow cannabis extremely effectively, and nobody else has figured it out. Actually, we were laughed at when we told all the kind of the growers out there, and the, especially in the U.S. space, the guys in the California and Colorado markets have been growing forever, laughed at us and said we couldn't grow cannabis aquaponically. It was impossible. So we've proven them wrong over 3 years of blood, sweat, and tears. Yeah. So here we are today.
So it looks like Monet, in his numerous paintings of water lilies, was onto something here, huh?
He absolutely was. Well, you know, this is not new. We're not breaking new ground or new science by saying that we're the only aquaponics guys that we invented this system. The, you know, the Aztecs used floating rafts with plants on them in fish ponds. So, you know, the science of aquaponics and growing plants in water has been around for millennia. We're not doing anything, reinventing the wheel by doing this, but figuring out how to grow cannabis, because it's a very unique plant to grow. It's got a very specific nutrient demand at different phases of growth. It's a fast growing plant. And with all those different nutrient values, how do you get those to the plant in an ecosystem without, you know, killing your fish or using additives? So it was a challenge and we enlisted people whose brain power collectively is a lot bigger than mine or my business partner. So all the doctors and the PhDs, the botanists, everybody that we've enlisted from the universities and the founders of these commercial systems all helped us achieve what we are today.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So there's nothing new under the sun, and you think this is just a better way of growing cannabis from the standpoint of purity, not needing chemicals, fertilizer, and pesticides. What about, I've heard of them growing cannabis hydroponically. How much better is hydroponics than aquaponics?
Well, hydroponics is still so. This is the marriage of aquaculture fish with hydroponics is what now is aquaponics. So it's that same deep water culture that they use in the hydroponic scenarios. The difference with hydroponics is that you're using commercial fertilizers. You've probably seen that blue or green water that's circulated through the plants. All manufactured commercially, all in that water. Giving the plants exactly the values of NPK they need from a commercial setting. Now, plants will uptake those nutrients, and you're going to get that buildup of mineral salts and nitrites and nitrates in the flowers. It's required flushing. But also, mm-hmm. at the end of that growing cycle, you have hydroponic, you've got gray water, you've got water that's spent. It's got no value left in it whatsoever that has to be deposited outside. And, as water resources, as we all know, water resources are a shrinking natural resource for us. Over the years, the next number of years, you're going to see fresh water being traded on commodities indexes. It's going to be a value or valuable commodity. So if you're not latching on to sustainable methods now, then you're a dinosaur in the agriculture world. And I'm not just talking about cannabis. I'm talking about all greenhouse growers, all people who grow hydroponically, and anybody who has this gray spent hydroponic water or nitrate or phosphate rich soils that you're going to have to store out in the environment that would potentially leach into the ground and affect ground source water. Well, over a period of time, I believe it's going to be legislated. You'll be mandated by some government regulation to have to clean that spent waste product out prior to putting it out in the environment. So it's going to add cost to agricultural operations where I have no environmental impact, zero environmental impact with our process. So I will never have to change my methodology. As I grow and expand, my costs will keep reducing and others will be increasing. So that's our reality. So that's aquaponics.
Fascinating. And what do you think the limits are to production?
They're limitless. So right now in my system, I have about 6,000 tilapia between my nursery and our flowering rooms in my first building, which is about 32,000 square feet. I'm just under construction of a 240,000 square foot addition, again, all indoor growing environment. I ramp up to about 55,000 tilapia in that building. Our systems, in my first building, 32,000 square feet, I'm using 800-gallon fish tanks. I have three 800-gallon systems in my building, which comprises about 16 800-gallon fish tanks. And then I have 20 1,200-gallon systems in my next building. So it's all totally scalable, but it's all based on, you know, stocking density of fish, as I say, water temperature, bacteria counts, hard water, hard surface area to water surface area. There's a lot of scientific data that we've accumulated that makes the system scalable. And I think that's been a common misconception in the world, because my competition has been saying that, you know, we're a one trick pony kind of thing, that we can't grow. Well, it's false, because there's really no negatives to our system. So they have to say something about it. So I think that's the big one. But it is totally scalable. I can make my growing rafts as large as I want, strictly due to the size of the fish tank and the number of fish that are producing the waste for that grow bed.
That is incredibly cool. Love the
concept. It is very, very cool. No, and nobody else is doing it. We're the only people globally doing this.
Mm-hmm. So you think this is going to be a trend? Do you have patents on your IP or what?
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Egypt is on the verge, once again, becoming a world-renowned gold producer. The Golden Age is being rediscovered. For millennia, ancient Egyptian kingdoms prospered from unparalleled riches. Pharaohs built their empires and flaunted their abundant wealth that was made possible by the country's resource-rich gold deposits. Despite this rich history, modern Egypt remains one of the most underdeveloped gold mining countries in the world. Aton Resources is at the center of the modern Egyptian mining world, diligently working both as the only public exploration company in Egypt today and as the advocate for mining reform with the Egyptian government. However, those that arrive early, like Aton, will reap the best rewards. Aton's discovery of the legendary lost mountain of gold at Rudruin and its current aggressive drilling program there could potentially reap those rewards. Aton Resources is focused on its 100% owned Abu Marwat concession in the Arabian-Nubian Shield, located 200 kilometers north of Sentimen Sakkari's world-class gold mine. Aton possesses first-mover advantage in the underfollowed jurisdiction of Egypt, which is currently undergoing mining reform. To stay on top of Aton's latest drill results and news, go to AtonResources.com. Aton trades on the TSX-V under the ticker AAN and on the OTC under the ticker ANLBF.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Well, we've developed a ton of IP to make cannabis grow. Aquaponics, as I said, has been around for a long time, and there's lots of vegetable producers north, especially south of the border, where you guys are. You know, from Florida, a lot of the arid states, they are using aquaponics now to grow vegetables. But we're the guys to figure out how to grow cannabis. It's only going to grow these sustainable methods, and I just think that there's room for cannabis, and then you know, using aquaponics globally as I say the water resources are shrinking in the world. So it's going to be more accepted, and it sounds kind of weird for me to say this, but I do truly believe that aquaponics will be feeding the world someday.
I think so, huh? And it's all done indoors, right?
It's all done. Well, I choose to do it indoors. You can certainly use aquaponics in a greenhouse, but for me to get that replicatable process, for me to get that high grade medical GMP quality product, I want to know that my environment never changes. There are too many variables and elements you can't control in a greenhouse. You know, just your environment in general. You don't know how much sunlight or cloud cover, humidity, you know, rainfall, cold temperatures, warm temperatures. I like the stability of an indoor where I can replicate my environment every single day. I have total consistency, and also the ability to forecast my product as far as yields and timing for harvests. So I can tell you right now, you know, 3 years in advance when I'm going to be harvesting the week I'll be harvesting in one of my grow rooms. It's that exact.
How long does it take to harvest a crop anyway? Is it faster when you're doing it aquaponically?
Absolutely is. So right now I'm getting about 20% more yield, 20 on the low side, closer to 30% with some strains per year per square foot than hydroponic or soil growing. We get 6 harvests per year, and that by the time I take a cutting from a mother plant to the time I harvest that plant is an 8-week cycle.
And you're just doing cuttings.
6 harvests a year.
So you're doing cuttings. You don't need to use seedlings or seeds. You're actually using grafts, correct?
Well, cuttings. So you have your mother plants that are just large plants that are not flowered. So they your cannabis plants don't go into flower, will produce flowers unless you put them into a 12-hour light cycle. So we keep our mother plants in an 18-hour light cycle, so they'll just grow big and bushy and will never develop flowers. So we just take three node cuttings or three leaf cuttings from those mother plants, use a natural rooting hormone, and then put it in a peat moss plug where it'll develop roots. Now, taking cuttings from a plant and propagating from cuttings is not new. Everybody's been doing this with all kinds of different flowers and crops and vegetables for a very, very long time.
Thousands of years.
Yeah, exactly. So, the evolution to that is now, mothers, you will eventually dilute your genetics by continually cutting plants, and you have to replace your mothers every once in a while. And I'm not going to get into the details of how many rounds of cuttings you take and all the other things that go with that. But now we've just developed, or we're just under construction for a tissue culturing facility. So we're not going to be taking cuttings from mothers anymore. We're taking the leaves from the cannabis plant. We're extracting the cells, growing those cells out in an agar solution in a very controlled environment. And instead of getting, 150 cuttings from one of my mother plants every 2 weeks, now we'll get up to 10,000 clones from the cells of a leaf. So if you want to talk about exact genetic consistency or as close as you can botanically, that's the way to do it. That's the future of cannabis and replication and high quality products and consistent products is by tissue culturing and growing your plants from a cellular level.
Fascinating. So what's going on in our neighbor to the north since October 17th when recreational cannabis was legalized and I assume the whole industry became effectively a legitimate industry? What have you seen going on there, Warren?
Well, it's certainly been an exciting time. Lots of hype, lots of licensed producers jockeying for position in store shelf space. Right now there's a shortage in Canada. Everybody is running out of product. All of our retail spaces are running out of product. I've chosen not to go into the retail space and be in that recreational market. Green Relief's focus is medical, making medicine for people who need or people we can help get through the day by using this product medicinally. So we think there's a true therapeutic value in cannabinoids, THC, CBDs. And so that's the track we're staying. I think, eventually I want to be a pharmaceutical company, but that's kind of a sidebar to what we were talking about. The landscape has changed in Canada. We are legitimate businesses. We're federally licensed businesses. We have bank accounts, checking accounts, all the other things that go with that, as opposed to how you guys have to deal with things on a state level with the monetary side of the businesses. We have a huge shortage of cannabis in our country now for those retail lines, and people are scrambling to get product. So it's prices are up, everything's great. Eventually, as this product commoditizes, and you've gone through it in California, Seattle, Oregon and all the states, Colorado, you've all seen the ups and downs. There's a product commoditizes, supply and demand take over. Now I'm just talking to somebody in Oregon down in Las Vegas there a couple of weeks ago at the show, and he says, the prices are rock bottom per pound now. So
yeah, they've gone down 50%.
Same thing's going to happen in Canada. Eventually, it'll suffer the same ebbs and flows of that supply and demand.
Yeah, well, cannabis might not grow on trees, but it does grow on stalks. And the fact is, in Washington State and Oregon, the price of cannabis has declined 50% since the past year. And that's all across everything, concentrates, edibles, you name it. So I expect it to happen. One thing when there was I liken it to casino gambling in the U.S. Back when there was just Vegas, then there was Atlantic City. And it took many, many years to finally match supply with demand, where probably now we've got excess supply of gaming venues in the States. With cannabis, it's so easy to ramp up supply that you wonder how long will they have these How long will you have a market advantage? And then the other thing is, can see the handwriting on the wall. If the big pharma comes in, I don't think big pharma is coming in, but obviously big tobacco is jumping on the bandwagon. And, you know, once they get involved, then you know that there's going to be regulatory hurdles that favor big cannabis, big tobacco, and really discriminate against small producers, right? I mean, this is what they're going to try to do. And then you're going to have the craft growers like you have the craft brewers. I mean, you know, when you go back to Samuel Adams, the guy who founded it, back when he founded Samuel Adams, first craft brewer to go national in the States, he had to get new laws passed in every state because brewing your own beer was, or brewing microbrews, was strictly prohibited. So are we going to see a similar thing where big pharma, big tobacco, big alcohol take this space over?
I have to assume in time that's probably going to be the case. It'll be a decision by each individual company out there, whether they take advantage of a big check or they want to just carry on their own. And yeah, that's where a huge proponent of being extremely efficient in operations, because I think whether you're going to survive the reconciliation of the industry, and when the dust settles, if you want to be left standing in one of those, whether you're craft or not, it's all about your cogs. And people have a huge misconception out there in the marketplace that, oh, cannabis, it's such a nice margin, and you can make a wad of cash in the marketplace if you want to become a grower. And people have delusions of grandeur, but you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to basic business fundamentals, and it's cost of goods. You've got an extremely high quality product going out the door for as little as of cost to produce it as possible. And I think that's what's going to save you, whether the big companies want to, you know, try to squash you like a bug or not and want to sell the product at a loss leader and put you out of business. You have to have aggressive cost of goods. And I think there's going to be a shakeup in the industry as it gets bigger. And, you know, you said at the beginning, I think you said it was a $53 billion estimate on what the size of the market is. Well, yeah, with those kind of numbers, of course, there's going to intrigue the bigger players to get into the market space, whether that's tobacco, alcohol, or pharma. They're all going to have their fingers in the pie there somewhere at some point.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. And, you know, if you try to go make your own brand of cigarettes now and try to sell them, forget it. You can't do it. I'd love to be able to do a craft. And that's what they want to do to this space. And, you know, the difference is, alcohol was illegal, but before alcohol was illegal, it was legal. And so it's a little bit different. This was illegal long before. That there is a certain comfort level, though, going into a pharmacy or dispensary and seeing the product that you're thinking about buying being fully disclosed, its ingredients, its concentration, whether it's a hybrid or, you know, indica or sativa. You know, there's a sense of well-being that comes from properly labeled and packaged things that you put into your body. And that's, you know, something that nobody really ever talks about. It's just, oh, it's legal, you don't have to buy it from a dealer. But the fact is, when you've got this good labeling, good packaging and branding,
transparency,
know, yeah, it's really, it changes the whole thing. Because then it's like, yeah, well, I could buy from some guy on the street and it's 25% cheaper, but who knows where that stuff has been, right?
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. So totally get it.
Yeah, so I find that interesting, and it's an aspect of legalization that nobody talks about. It's not just legitimizing the product itself, because that's what legalization does, obviously. It's that it elevates it. Now it's a real product. It's not a bag full of some leaf that gets passed around. It's packaged professionally. Like I say, so it's got X amount of CBD oil in it. It's got X amount of THC, and you know what you're putting into your body. So this is a fascinating capitalistic experiment. I You know, you just look at what Big Pharma has done. Go try to market your own brand of ibuprofen, right? Yeah. How where is that going to get you? You can't do it. You could theoretically do craft beer. Even they're getting into craft like spirits, like people sell moonshine, homemade vodka, and bourbon. Bourbon has gotten really big as a result of the whole craft spirits type movement. So, and I think there's a desire on the public not to make these companies any more powerful than they need be.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think as we advance, we're going to see a lot more relevance in what you had said earlier, which is a big kind of always been a big bone of contention for us as Canadians, and you know, buying from the illicit market. You're right about the packaging and the branding, and just knowing what you're consuming. I know the millennials especially, who really care about, you know, dealing with companies who give back. Also, most of the society today cares about what they ingest and what they put in their bodies. It's a big deal to be able to have a legitimate industry where you have to conform to, you know, European pharmacopoeia standards before your products can go out there to the marketplace and be very relevant with what's inside that product and how you made it with everything written on a label. It's such a necessity, because it's been a huge problem and people don't know what they're getting. You know, you're hearing about all the time about, you know, cannabis being laced with fentanyl and other topical additives and things that just are not desirable in the marketplace, and people dying because of it. So it's time. This time has been needed for a long time. It's the right place, right time, and we as Canadians are lucky to be able to be in the forefront of a new emerging market.
Yeah. And that's really what it is, an emerging market. It's not quite the Wild West like maybe it was when Colorado first legalized, and Washington State shortly thereafter, but maybe it's the Wild Midwest.
Yeah, green week on that one.
So interesting times ahead. Just tell us where we can find out more about you, Warren. In case you didn't catch it, we were discussing cannabis with Warren Bravo, and just tell us where your company's at and how to connect.
Sure. Again, it's Green Relief. I'm Warren Bravo. I'm the CEO and co-founder of the company. You can email me directly at wbravo@greenrelief.ca. Our website is greenrelief.com or greenrelief.ca. We have a ton of information on what we're doing and as a company, our sustainable methods that we use for growing our cannabis, and the high quality products that we put out to the marketplace. So happy to talk to anybody who's got an interest in growing aquaponically, and happy to help you get started in that as well. So we're here to be part of the solution.
I love it. Hey, well, good luck to you. I think you're on the cutting edge, and I like your marketing. I like the sustainability and purity of the way you produce your product. I think it's way different than anyone else out there. Hey, questions, comments, we invite you to be a part of the show and email us at kl@carrylutz.com. If you're listening on YouTube, then please subscribe, like, and share. I think that's what you do on YouTube. If you're not listening on YouTube, please share it with a friend. Let them know what we're about, that we stand for freedom. We're trying to help you find solutions to problems that exist in our new economy, and that we're there with you all the way. Like I said, Twitter feed is @CarrieLutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Warren, wish you the best of luck. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Kerry. It was an absolute pleasure.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.